Hello and welcome to episode 166 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where a handful of folks get together to talk about games and God and how these things work brilliantly together. My name is Mike Perna, and sadly, my other co-hosts are not here tonight. This is, sadly, a solo mic episode, but do not lose heart because there is so much in this. Because, yes, there was a scheduling mishap, which at the last minute we realized, oh no, none of us can get to mics at the same time. So what are we going to do for this next episode? Were we going to have to scrap it? Were we just going to have to make something up on the fly? And then I realized something. This scheduling disaster, it happened to fall on the same week that PAX Unplugged happened. And so pretty much all I said was, hey guys, why don't we do a PAX episode and give the people a little bit about what this brand new convention is like? Everybody signed off on it, and I am here to present you with, well, my limited view of PAX Unplugged, because while the Inroads silent partner, Sean Brooks, ended up being at the convention for all 3 days, I was there for just Saturday. If you're wondering what that was, it was simply because of the fact that my wife is very pregnant, and I, while there was part of me that was like, man, I wish I could be there all 3 days. The other part of me said, my wife is home and she is 8 months pregnant and I am not going to be that guy who spends a weekend playing games while she's here by her lonesome, taking care of stuff around the house. I will not ever be that guy. And so I was very grateful that she did let me go out for the one day. It's a short hop on a quick car ride and a little bit of a train ride across the river to get to Philly for me. And so she said, I can go the one day, and I crammed as much con as I could into that one day. There's going to be a part later on when I talk about some of the stuff that I didn't get to see or that I only saw briefly, mostly because, yeah, there's so much. I feel bad. If you're one of the regulars who reached out to me on Twitter or the Tavern and said, man, I'm going to be there. I really want to meet you. I really want to say hi and see you in person. And I didn't make that happen. I really do want to apologize. It was not for lack of trying. I just went back and forth like a ping pong ball across that expo hall all day long. And there's just too much to see in one day. I mean, that's pretty much cons in general. But specifically in my situation, I tried real hard. I feel bad because there were even people who were designers who had booths there, and I tried so much. Especially the one that comes to mind is Portal Dragon. The folks at Portal Dragon were like, "You need to come by and say hi. We're doing this cool stuff." And I'll tell you that I went by the booth a bunch of times, and yes, their stuff looks awesome. But here's also the thing. Their stuff looks so awesome that there was never a moment that I walked by that booth that there wasn't a line of people looking over each other's shoulders trying to look at the demo of that awesome. So I didn't get a chance to see them either. So again, 1,000 apologies if I didn't get in touch with you. Next year, and I'm going to talk about this later as well, next year we're going to do so much more with PAX Unplugged. Sean and I left that con going, wow, this is going to be our con. This is going to be our place to be because Sean and I are so close, and like we loved the vibe of the con. We loved what it was doing, and we're really excited about what's going to be in the future. But I do want to take a little bit of time just to run through some of what I saw. And so I do want to talk about just the general feel of the convention. I want to talk about some of the people I talked to, the games I played, which, because I was running back and forth like an idiot, I didn't get a lot of time at the table, but I think what I did get was a pretty quality time. So hopefully I'll be able to talk about that as well as talking about all the stuff about the convention. So the feel of the con. The big thing that I loved about PAX, if you've never been to a PAX and you have no idea what PAX is short for the Penny Arcade Expo. It started off with the guys at Penny Arcade out in the West Coast and has since kind of exploded. There's now PAX West. It was called PAX Prime. That's out in Seattle, I believe. You've got PAX East, which is in Boston. You've got PAX South, which is San Antonio, Texas. And you've got PAX Australia, which is, I believe, out in Sydney? Don't quote me on that, but it is in Australia. And this one, this brand new convention, is PAX Unplugged, which, for my money, based on what I've seen and what I've read and people I've talked to, PAX East has seen an increasing growth in the amount of tabletop stuff. Normally, PAX is very video game heavy. It is super video game centric. But in PAX East especially, the tabletop there has just grown and grown and grown. So I think the guys at Penny Arcade basically said, man, we like tabletop stuff. And apparently the people who hang out with us and who like our content really like tabletop stuff. Maybe we should do a convention specifically targeting tabletop players. And so that's what PAX Unplugged is. And before I get into anything else, I've mentioned it on a couple places already. The thing that excites me about PAX Unplugged is the fact that as far as the big ticket, the big scale tabletop gaming conventions, we on the East Coast have kind of gotten the shaft. See, for us, it's a challenge because everything's in the Midwest or the West Coast or anything like that. We don't really have any of that. There has been no convention. Yeah, PAX East has, like I said, has been growing, but even then, it's still not a tabletop gaming convention. It's a nerd culture convention that happens to have tabletop gaming. So, yeah, there's Gen Con, which is a 12-hour drive for me. There's Origins, which I still want to get to Origins. Origins is an 8-hour drive for me. And I'm not alone in that. Pretty much all of us on the East Coast have been, you know, a part of that feeling of, man, I want to get out to these cons, these big, uber impressive conventions, but man, it's just hard. So in comes PAX Unplugged in Philadelphia. I'm not going to lie, I was giddy because, man, it is so easy for me to get to Philly. I actually went to college in a suburb of Philly, so I've been through that area. It was so cool just to be able to have this kind of convention, this level of convention, practically in my backyard. So above and beyond that, like if you're listening to this and you're from some other place or you're even from some other country, I'm sorry, but for me and for the rest of us on the East Coast, that in and of itself is a big deal, that something of this caliber is finally within a reasonable distance to us. Talking about the caliber, there was actually a point where I think it was Sam Healy who looked at me and said, it'll be interesting to see what the numbers of PAX Unplugged is, because they haven't released any of that at this point. But it'll be interesting to see what the numbers are, because it looked like there were a lot of people there, but it didn't feel like there were a lot of people there. Like, if you've ever been to Gen Con is almost oppressive with the number of people there. The amount of shoving and kind of shuffling through aisles, and anytime somebody stops to look at something, 15 people kind of have to stop in their tracks and tumble over each other, because it's just wall-to-wall people. PAX Unplugged, there was always people around, and there was always a good crowd, and yeah, there was more than one occasion that I found myself stopping to talk about something or do something, and somebody else got kind of like, oh, sorry, I, you know, didn't mean to trip on you like that. But it never felt like that oppressive Gen Con thing. Like, it wasn't like you were constantly worried that you were in somebody's way. And that's something special. That is something that's great. If you can pull off being a large scale convention, but feeling like a small local convention, that is an art form. That is something special, and I really hope they maintain that. It'll be interesting to see in the future if they can actually keep pulling that off. Because for a lot of people, a lot of the publishers even, this was kind of an exploratory con. It's the first time they did this. It's the first time PAX did something like this. And so a lot of the places that came, and the designers that came, the publishers that came, a lot of them came in with this understanding of, all right, we're going to try this out and see how it goes. So I definitely think, looking around, I definitely think it was successful enough that they're definitely going to do it again. And I believe they've already started setting up the dates for next year's too. But I'm curious to see how much of that carries over as year after year goes by, to see if they're able to still maintain that feeling that it's a big con, but it doesn't feel that way. But even as I talk about that, I have to talk about the queue line as before the doors opened, because that blew my mind. Sean and his wife were there the day before, and they said, yeah, they're not going to let you into the hall yet. You got to go into a line, which at first I was like, man, that's really a nice way to do this. It's much more orderly and organized than something like Gen Con, where it's like the throng just pushes their way through the doors. And so I go, wow, that's really nice. So should we go online? And the two of them looked at me and said, it's not worth it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to walk down there. I'm going to see what it's like, because you guys have been here. You've seen what it's like. Let me take a look. How bad could it possibly be? My goodness. I came through this archway into this large open room, and there were not one, but two different queue lines, and both of them weaved their way through this open room like some kind of dire snake. And it, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people are waiting just to get into the door. And I found myself standing there going, this is madness. And it ended up that we just kind of stood around waiting because, you know, we weren't in any super large hurry to get in there. And we just kind of just watched as the people, when they eventually did open the doors, and the enforcers, which are the volunteers that kind of make PAX run, the enforcers are just kind of guiding these people from the queue line in through the doors. And I'm just watching. I'm like it's like a solid 20 minutes of just watching people filter their way into the hall. And that was the only time it felt like there were a lot of people, because I'm just watching this snake of humanity wander its way through the hallways of the convention center into the main hall. But so that was an experience, but wow. And the hall itself was great. The only serious complaint I have as a man who is no longer in his 20s, the floors were concrete, and my knees are still yelling at me for the amount of walking I did on concrete floors. Those of you who are listening to us who are on the younger end of the spectrum and don't have to worry about stuff like arthritis and, you know, football injuries, you can enjoy this convention to your heart's content. The rest of us, be sure to give yourself plenty of time to rest and sit down, because I did not, and I am paying for it. But that really was my only serious complaint. The maps were well done. The only thing that I could say that wasn't up to the normal kind of con experience that I've been used to is that, yeah, the booths were numbered, but nowhere was those numbers posted. I remember in Gen Con, there are giant signs like, this is row, like 1500, 1600, whatever. So it was really easy to find the number you're looking for. Here, it's kind of just, okay, you know they're generally in that area there. But really, it was a pretty easy layout, and it was pretty easy to navigate. So, yeah, maybe you had to check your map a handful of times to get to where you were going, but it was pretty easy to get there. So, slight complaint, but really not enough to dissuade me from this convention. It was... there were plenty of aisle space, because so even when there were crowds kind of shuffling through, you could easily negotiate yourself. And if a guy as large as me can negotiate it, the average person is going to have no problem doing it. So I really have no complaints about the setup of the hall. And it was really the thing that really grabbed me, the thing that solidified early on that this was our convention, that of all the things that are out there, all the gaming conventions that really excited me to not just to go to, like Gen Con. I love going to Gen Con, but people asked us if Inroads is going to go to Gen Con, and really the cost to benefit of what we do as a ministry, which is building relationships over playing games together. Gen Con, while not a terrible idea, it's not really conducive to what we do. So it's hard for us to do that, especially because going to Gen Con has become wicked expensive. So what's different at PAX Unplugged is that PAX Unplugged has giant areas dedicated to open gaming, where people can just grab tables and sit down and play till the wee hours. And so standing in the open play area where it's not like this is open play from X hour to X hour and it's tournaments at this point. Literally, this was just straight up open gaming all the time from the doors opening to the doors closing. So I was especially appreciative of the fact that that was available to us, that there was never, ever a shortage of space to play games and to run games and to do all that stuff. And this is just in the main room. There's also a role-playing room. There was also a first look kind of area where you can talk to people who are currently in the process of creating games. There's a whole other section dedicated to that kind of thing, like unpub stuff. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities there just to hang out with people and play games, which is our bread and butter. So I'm super excited about the potential for this con because, like I said, Gen Con is not even at all about hanging out and playing games. Like, yeah, if you're into role-playing, you can find role-playing games. And if you don't mind just doing pickup games on the floor in the hallway, you can probably find some games. But it's always a battle to find place to just do random play. I remember there was one time we're like, oh yeah, like after everything shuts down, we'll just hang out in the hotel lobby. And there were many, many times we tried to do that and we couldn't find even the tiniest bit of open flat surface. Like I wasn't even looking for tables. I was just looking for flat surfaces and I couldn't find them. So the fact that there's that much open gaming at PAX Unplugged really made me happy. I think if I'm going to describe the vibe of the convention, I have to actually blatantly steal an observation from somebody I talked to. Sadly, I do not have audio for this. Not only because of the quote that I'm going to at least vaguely do accurately, but also because of the fact that it was Rob Daviau, and we were talking about Fireball Island, but he was in a rush, and so I couldn't just stop and record with him. So literally, I really wish I could present that to you, but you're just going to have to go with my word on it that we had this conversation about Fireball Island, and the short version is, wow, I'm excited for Fireball Island to actually happen, because he had some really interesting points about the fact that yeah, this game is seen by a lot of people through these serious rose-colored glasses, that it's not nearly as cool as all of us think it is, which is pretty easy because I really think it was fantastic, and I understand that it was pretty much a rolling move that you flicked marbles at. But yeah, so all that stuff aside, there was one thing when I asked him what he thought of the convention at the point that I'd seen him, and he said, if you look at the big conventions, Gen Con is for people who want to buy games. They want to find the newest stuff, they want to find the best stuff, and they want to get it before anybody else does. So folks go to Gen Con to shop. Origins, people go to Origins to play games. It's literally just, these are the games that are out. I want to play these games. Let's get a table and let's play these games. PAX, in his opinion, was a con for people who want to learn. Because a combination of the fact that, again, there is no major gaming convention on the East Coast. So I was talking to a bunch of guys who create board game content, and lots of people were going up to them saying, oh my goodness, this is the first time I've ever been to a con where I could talk to you. Still, other people would tell them, this is my first con I've ever gone to. So the overarching kind of demographic of this convention are people who are just getting into board gaming or have been into board gaming for a while, but have never had a place to plug in. They've never really had that place to find the gaming community. And so PAX Unplugged becomes a con for people who want to learn. So demos became way more important. And something that I think is going to be interesting to see how PAX develops as a convention is just that fact. Because yeah, you know, a lot of the numbers that I was hearing from designers, not everybody, some people did really well, but some people did not do as well, you know, sales-wise as they were hoping. But you had a ton of people who'd never even heard of their games before PAX who are now interested and who want to do research and who want to save up to make sure they get those games and are sitting there at the table playing them and telling everybody they know about that game they played at PAX. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops because, you know, this isn't going to be a thing where you're going to see a giant Fantasy Flight booth that is literally like almost literally acreage of expo hall where people line up for 3 hours just for the sake of being able to buy a thing. That's not what this is like. So I'm really curious to see in future years how everything kind of comes together. That said, one thing that was really intriguing to me during the whole process of being at PAX Unplugged is the fact that, like I said, Fantasy Flight didn't have any kind of big thing. Paizo, who was definitely there, Paizo usually is another one that has a ton of floor space. They were there, and their booth wasn't tiny, but it wasn't near what I've seen at other conventions. So a lot of companies were just kind of like, all right, I don't know if it's going to be worth spending the big bucks to get floor space because that's honestly a risk. You don't know if you're going to be able to make that money back because this is a brand new convention and who knows what it's going to be like. So what it meant was that a lot of these big companies that usually kind of take over the hall had tiny little booths that were not that much bigger than, you know, any other booth, which meant that a lot of indie designers and indie publishers who often have been doing good work and making good games, but will never have the kind of presence that those larger companies are going to have because they just don't have the resources, had pretty much equal floor space with all the big guys. And that made for some really interesting moments because I know some of these indie designers, and it was cool that they were able to get a little bit of the highlight, to be able to get their stuff in front of people that on any other day in any other large-scale convention might not be able to get. They might not be get able to have near the kind of pull that they had because they were on this level footing with the big guys at this particular convention. Particularly, there are a couple of them that I actually got audio with. One of them, it's going to be sad because in the audio clip that you're going to hear, I talked about the fact that he brought this game to the Game Church Academy East, where I was one of the speakers, and I wanted to playtest his game there, and I couldn't. And I had all intentions of playtesting his game here, but I couldn't. So the happy version of this is that I talked with him and he's going to work on sending me a prototype so I can help him play test with folks here at our game days. But Chris Bowden is a game designer who has spent the last 4 years working on this game. It's not published, it's not finished, but that doesn't mean it isn't pretty. It doesn't mean it's not interesting. To be able to see the board is a really cool looking board. It's a really well designed board. And nobody I've talked to that has played this game has had an overall bad experience with it. There's been some little things, and he's been tweaking on the rules for 4 years, and so he's really working on refining this game. And yeah, so again, in this audio clip, you're going to hear me say that I'm going to play test it. It actually fell prey to the fact that I was only there for the day, but it will happen. And if you ever get a chance to hang out with this dude, you need to find him and you need to play his game because it's going to be worth a test. At bare minimum, it's going to be worth your time to test it and to be able to be part of the process that makes this game better. So, ladies and gentlemen, our first audio clip in this Solo Mic episode, Chris Bowden to talk about his game.
Naturally, I eventually had to wander my way over to the Game Church booth because, we have friends here, and so I figured I would at least, come by and stop by. But a game that I have been trying to play test literally at every event that this man and I have been together at, but I've never been able to do it, is sitting here in front of me on the table, and I'm going to get a playtest in eventually. But before I do that, I want to just let you know about this game and what it's about and the whole process of going on here. So I can introduce you, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself and your company and your game and all that shenanigans.
Sounds good. Well, Mike, my name is Chris Bowden. I'm the director of Winter Moon Games, and today I'm showing off my board game, Pandemonium Estate. It's an adventure board game intended to be a gateway game for people who really aren't super into tabletop, but also enjoy a board game every once in a while. The game actually has three ways to play. And today we're showing off a demo version of one of our storylines called The Depraved, where you and your friends are trapped in the mansion, waiting this killer who's found his way in, and he's got all these traps out there, and he's trying to kill you guys, and you have to seal off all the rooms to prevent him from getting in. But then you're also kind of working together, but you're also looking after one item that will help you and only you escape, leave your friends to die at the hands of this depraved. So
you got to love a good semi-co-op.
Yeah, so it's definitely not co-op, but I don't discourage people from working together. But the game is 4 years now in the making, and we just finished the artwork about 3 weeks ago. So it's very fresh, very new. The box is brand new. All the character art is brand new. Everything's hand-painted. So it's been a labor of love, let me tell you. And we're still in the playtesting phase, working on just demoing it this week. We're not really working on promotion, trying to see what people think of the mechanics and how I can change things. It's been an interesting couple of days so far.
So I figured I would ask, because I know this game, you brought this to the Academy East.
Yes.
And so, again, like I said, I tried to play it, but I didn't. But I know, having kind of walked by as y'all were playing it, that after the game was over, you were asking everybody, what can I change, what needs to get tweaked.
Yeah.
So rather than go through all of it, because 4 years of changes is a lot of changes, but what's been like the most surprising change that you've had to do?
The most significant change only happened about a month ago, where from year one till year three and a half, the game has always been based on random die roll movement. And it worked, kind of, maybe like 60% of the time, but I always never felt great about that mechanic. The game never really worked right, perfectly, all the time. And so I just recently did away with random die roll movement. And I was afraid to do that for a while because I was like, I'm going to have to redo the whole game. Turns out, not so much. So now you have controlled movement. Your players are a lot more in control of what they can do every turn. And the storyline modes, we used to have to stop the game because it would just go on too long. And people were like, this game isn't going to end. We're just, spinning our wheels here. Now things are way more streamlined. Things have a very clear end. And there's always going to be an end in sight. And you can make a good strive for that goal.
Yeah.
So that's the two significant changes. Yeah.
Nice. All right, Bowden, I'm going to let you go.
Thanks, man.
But definitely hope you have a great PAX. I know you said you've had a good one so far.
Yep.
It's literally day two. So, have a good one.
Thanks for stopping by, Mike.
Now, he wasn't the only indie that I talked to. I talked to a ton of them, but he also wasn't the only indie that I grabbed audio with, because one of the guys who it was interesting to talk to, because he's been to shows before, but this was the first, in his words, the first major convention that he was actually able to bring his company and have a booth and have like a real presence at a convention of this kind of caliber. So he pretty much was the epitome of what I was talking about, that smaller companies who would otherwise get kind of overshadowed by the big stuff had pretty much equal footing with everybody else that was there. And that is our friend Jason Tagmeyer from Buttonshy Games. Now, the Buttonshy crew was there. They had all their games, even stuff that it literally hit. I think the Kickstarter ended about 40 minutes after I talked with him. So the most recent Kickstarter had literally just finished, and he was there bringing stuff, and he was demoing the new stuff that hadn't really been produced yet, and he had all of the old games, and I could keep talking about that, but I think I'm better served by letting you listen to Jason. So here's Jason talking about Buttonshy and their presence at the con.
So a couple of local boys went to Philadelphia, and you've often heard me talk about whenever we do Tavern Con and anything like that, whenever they get a new Kickstarter, I usually try to get it out there. We love the folks at Buttonshy, and I couldn't not come by and say hi to Jason Tagmeyer and the guys over here. So, Jason, how's the con going, and like, what are the things you're psyched about today?
I'm psyched that it's a five-minute drive to get here,
exactly.
First of all. I'm also psyched that this is our first major gaming convention, and being local, we were able to do a major gaming convention. And there's been a lot of people here that are just, they know our stuff. So we waited long enough that We don't look like that weird company that has a cardboard sign that's like, who are you? We have people who are
it
like...
It might be cardboard, but it is good looking and huge, so...
Yeah.
I won't even point out the fact that apparently you had your kids doing it, you know, the other night.
But, like, we were... there's enough people here that everybody's coming and saying, I know your stuff. Our first person that bought a game, we were demoing Universal Rule by Chip Bouvet.
Yep.
The first person came in, bought five copies of that.
Wow.
For everybody he knows, including his mother. So... people knew us and came in knowing some of the games, and that was great.
So, you know, you say so far things have been successful. Like, of all the games, you got a boatload of games.
Yes,
that's the benefit of having like a what is it? 16 cards is your average usually?
18 cards.
18
total,
cards.
Yeah.
So, you got a boatload of stuff here. What in general? Because I'm sure depending on where you go, different games are going to be popular.
Yeah, exactly.
So here, which game so far has been the standout?
Circle the Wagons. It just came out a couple months ago, so that's been huge here. Avignon as well. The two of them are kind of neck and neck.
My personal favorite.
Yeah, exactly. They're neck and neck for the top spot here. It's hard to tell, though, because like, we're going to do numbers when we get out of here. Everything's been selling. Like, it's great.
Good. It, that's something to really be content about when literally there's nothing that isn't being touched.
Yeah, exactly. There's 30 games here, and everyone's getting moved.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will leave you to it because y'all got a line going on here, and I don't want to take you any longer. But I hope you have a really good con.
Thanks. Good seeing you.
I love talking to indie devs because you can just hear the passion in their voice. This is a labor of love because, you know, in Jason's case, you know, he is like, this is what he does. But in Bowden's case, he has a day job. This isn't what he wants to do. He hopes that someday he can be at that point where he's striving to make a living off of his game design. So I love hearing them talk about it. And I love the fact that they're getting this shot to be in front of people and to get the attention. But that doesn't mean, just because I love talking to those guys and love getting them out in front of more people, that doesn't mean that I didn't want to talk to people with the bigger booths, with the larger footprint in the gaming industry. I did want to talk to them. And again, I was only able to do so much and get so much on tape, but I definitely want to make sure that I get that for you here. So the first one that is... it really is a small company, but it's been making such waves lately that it feels like it's a larger company. So I think that's a good transition into the larger stuff, because I talked to the guys at Restoration Games. In fact, I talked to the head of Restoration Games, and I talked about not only the convention itself, but also Indulgence, which recently got the Inroads approved seal for being a great game with a Bible/church history theme that is well worth your time. So I want to make sure that I get Justin on here, because it was super great to actually meet him. I've been sharing emails with this guy as we went through the process of approving the game, that I really wanted to make sure that I touched base with him and just hear his side of the game's development and how the game is going, and as well as the rest of what Restoration does, because their whole model is really interesting to me, of taking old games and giving them new life. So here's Justin, and we're going to talk about Restoration Games.
As a lot of you guys know who listen to the podcast, we recently gave Indulgence the Inroads Approved seal. And so when I found out that Restoration Games was going to be here, I really wanted to make sure I got over here and talked to some people about it and the convention and all the other stuff. So I'm here with Justin from Restoration Games. So far, just to open up with, how's the con going for you guys?
Con's been great. It's been a little more laid back, a little not as quite as chaotic as, like, say, a Gen Con. But a really good group of people. Like, they're not super experienced gamers, most of them, but they're really interested in learning, which is kind of exciting. And Philly's a nice city. We're right next to the Reading Terminal Market, which is nice. So,
which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, good eating for sure. But it's great. We have lots of demos, nonstop demos. Lots of people like taking advantage of that and wanting to see how the games play, and then coming over and buying the game, hopefully.
Well, very cool. As we were talking before I started recording, that it's been interesting because of the fact that this is a new crowd who doesn't know, because a lot of what you guys do is take games that were around for the old school gamers, no new game X, and can see how it's kind of developed. What kind of has been the impact that people have had with the games you brought now, not having that background?
So it's interesting. You're right, and so the one exception to that, of course, is Fireball Island.
So we still
everybody
have
knows
everybody.
Fireball
everybody knows Fireball Island. We still have people coming up like, oh, you're doing Fireball Island, that's cool, whatever. And then we'll show them the other games. But yeah, we sort of show them as a new game, and that is important and certainly fine because we always had to design the games to stand on their own anyway. I mean, we knew if it was just pure nostalgia, it wouldn't work. We'd flame out pretty quickly. So we designed the games to stand on their own, and it's working. You know, we've got nice components, good price points, and so for us, it's been really good.
So, like I said, we gave Indulgence the seal of approval. How has that game been going on? I mean, it's a trick-taking game, and I even... It's funny, because I ended up writing a review of it and putting it up on BGG, and my entire review was, I can't believe there's a trick-taking game with a theme that actually makes sense, because theme is hard to do in a trick-taking game. And everyone's like, well, I don't really care about the theme. So, you know, how does that kind of work? Like, what was the thought process of making that happen?
Yeah, it just sort of came to us. We originally were doing... It's sort of just as a pure Italian Renaissance. We wanted something with some sort of intrigue, so we sort of looked at maybe like a Game of Thrones type setting with political intrigue set in a fantasy setting, but we didn't want to... We figured if we couldn't get the art from the original Dragon Master, we didn't want to do fantasy because it would be too close. And so we sort of looked at like a different era or, you know, setting or whatever that had that same sort of political intrigue but wasn't fantasy. And we sort of came up with the Italian Renaissance. And then I just sort of was researching the subject matter to try and find it, honestly, to come up with a name for the game. And I came upon this concept of Indulgence, which I'd heard of before, but I didn't know a lot about. And doing some more research and sort of figuring out how that fit into everything, it thematically made sense. It's kind of a cool name. It's easy to spell. There's no other games named Indulgence. It checked all the boxes, so it sort of worked out. What's interesting to me here is that I'm finding a lot more people interested in pure trick-taking games because for them, if they're not sort of experienced hobby gamers and used to all these crazy hobby games, for them, the trick-taking games like Pinochle and Hearts and all that are very familiar.
They know that.
Yeah. And so for them, I say, oh, this is... I had a demo with someone today. Like, they play a ton of Pinochle.
Right.
And they were super excited. They were like, oh, this is so cool. Like, for them, it was sort of that gateway game, right? Where that bridges that gap between something like Pinochle and the hobby game market. So it was cool.
Okay, I do have one other question. I got to ask, what was the inspiration to put the actual ring in the game?
So originally, we were thinking about doing like a miniature, essentially like a 3D figurine as the Indulgence that you sat in front of you. And we looked at the price and we were like, I don't remember how I came up with the idea for the ring, but we were looking through some other ideas to do. And I said, well, how about a ring? Because I think we saw like a picture of a papal ring or something like that. It just sort of came out. It's like, a ring can't be that much more than a miniature.
Right.
And in fact, it turned out to be a little, we found one, we were worried that it would be too crappy. And so they sent over samples to us, and like some of them were like, wow, these are actually really nice. Like, this would be really cool. So we just decided to go with it. It was sort of a happy accident.
I was honestly surprised. When it said it had a ring in it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be one of those little plastic jobs. I actually tried it on. I'm like, I got to try it because it's amazing. And it's something that's interesting, just how something so small can add so much to the experience.
Yeah, it's a nice hook. It's like people like to play with it while they're playing. It just adds to the theme a little bit where they pretend to, you know, play around with the ring and stuff. So, yeah, it worked out. It was a happy accident, really.
All right, well, thank you so much. I'm going to let you go take care of business here at the booth, but it was so nice to meet you. And again, congratulations on getting the seal.
Thanks very much. Nice meeting you as well.
Another thing that you learn pretty quickly when you're dealing with the board gaming industry that, much like any other industry, it really helps to know people, to know a guy who knows a guy. And I happen to know a couple guys who were at the con who had an in with the folks over at WizKids. So when they're like, do you want to go talk to them? I said, absolutely, please let me talk to them because they have scooped up so many IPs lately. They are in the news constantly about how they're getting this and they're going to make this board game and that board game. And I need to talk to them. So, you know, they walked off. They said, you know, hey, can this guy talk to you? He said, absolutely. And before I knew it, I was talking to somebody at WizKids about the games that we're all hoping they're going to be making.
Okay, you can't shake a stick at a gaming website recently and not hear about all the different IPs that WizKids picked up. So when I had a chance to come over here and talk to folks at WizKids, I couldn't say no to that. So I'm here with Chris, And for starters, just like, how are you having what's your experience here at the con this year? Because this is a brand new con, so.
It's definitely much different than some of the other cons that we're used to. Say stuff like, you know, BBG, which actually was also going on recently, right. Or Gen Con, you know, those are very heavy board game focused. So I feel like at those, a lot of people are coming in specifically looking for, like, the newer games and everything. But something like PAX that has already pre-established itself, like in the world of video games or something, people come in and they spectate, like, the first day, and then the next day they come around and are really trying to get involved with stuff. So, like, yesterday we had a lot of people come in, take a look at the booth, and then just kind of leave and come back. Today we have been killing it with the demos and then the selling of the board games, because now people know what's here and they want to, like, really experience it. And then we also just put out the Wave 4 unpainted minis for Pathfinder and Dungeons & Dragons, and that has brought a lot of people. So we're seeing what type of crowd would be here as comparison to some of the other ones. But overall, it's just as exciting and just as fast-paced as, like, any other convention you would ever get to.
A lot of what I've been hearing from some of the other folks that I've talked to in the booths around here is that demos are always going to be important, but here, demos are, like,
yeah,
super important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why we're fortunate to have 5 tables out of all these different games that we have. You know, you walk around and you get about 2 or 3 per booth or whatever. You know, you're going to see, like, their big games. Here, we have so many demos running, and they're always in rotation. So we have people coming back again in the afternoon saying, what do you have out now? So it's just keeping up that hype and keeping up the excitement for all of our different products that we have.
So we'll get into what's coming out, because I'm sure there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But what do you have here at the con ready for people to look at?
The biggest one right now would have to be The Expanse. It's based off of the Sci-Fi Channel TV show of the same name.
Jeff Engelstein. I talked with him before it came out, and I was super excited about that.
He was actually here today.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was going
to
be around.
He'll be here. He was here today from 1 to 3 demoing the game himself and signing copies. He's here tomorrow. I want to say he's going to be earlier, from 11 to about 1-ish or so. Same thing, hanging out at the demo table, showing people how to play the game, coming in right from the designer's mouth, so you know you're getting the best experience possible, and signing copies again. So that's definitely one of our biggest sellers. The next one would probably be Favelas. It is a stack-building game based off of the colorful area in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
And it's really a lot of fun, because you're, like, in charge of, like, a little section of these little favelas stack things. And it's a color match game where if you match up certain colors, you'll be able to influence the point values of each of your stacks. And as you'll be able to bring stuff up, you can bring stuff down to, like, make your opponent lose points and everything. So it's very simple, very easy to get into. It's fun for the whole family. That would probably be another one that has been a good seller, and one that is almost never without people demoing it.
Nice. Well, like I said, you guys have picked up a bunch of IP that people are excited about lately. What are some of the things that is coming out in the near future that you're particularly excited about?
Okay, so one of the big things, we'll start with the Game Workshop partnership that we just had, I want to say maybe like 3-4 weeks ago. A lot of people were asking about some of the big things that were coming out. I can officially say that the Dice game that we were talking about is going to be a Dice Masters version of Warhammer 40,000.
Okay.
We were kind of just saying it was like a Dice game, and now it is officially Dice Masters. In addition to that, there will be a board game as well. We don't exactly know what the path we're taking with for that board game is, but a lot of that stuff will be released as 2018 goes on. Probably at least the Dice Masters will come out by fourth quarter then. The board game, we're still working on some of that. In addition to that, we have the ability to reprint Fury of Dracula and Relics, which are two really big Game Workshop board games that have been out of print for so long.
Oh, Fury of Dracula. Oh. Actually, one of our co-hosts, it isn't here today, but he was so bummed. He's like, he wanted to get Fury of Dracula. It was out of print. It got reprinted. He missed out. Now he's like, crap, I can't do it anymore. So he was super excited to find out.
He will definitely have it. And it's going to be the game point for point. We're not doing anything different to it or anything like that. It's just going to be a full reprint of the game. I have been asked today if Relics is ever going to have any type of expansions to it. Right now, I have to say no, but that doesn't mean something won't come out in the future, because we just want to keep working with Game Workshop the best that we can in order to try to get, you know, as much for them and work with them, you know, with their license and everything, and really make some great products for people out there. The other one that I will talk about would be Wizards of the Coast. We expanded our partnership with them to include Magic the Gathering. That only happened like a few weeks ago, so there's still a lot of like brainstorming and everything going on. But what I do know is that fourth quarter next year, there will be a board game for Magic the Gathering.
Oh, wow.
There will be a legit board game. We don't know exactly what exactly it's going to entail, but I know there is a board game currently out for Magic. I believe it's called like Arena of the Planeswalker or something.
Right.
it will be nothing like that. So whatever you've played in that game, the mechanics of that and everything, ours is going to be completely different on its own separate thing, taking all the influence from Magic and really, like, making a full new unique experience. And then whatever else comes from there, still working on, but hopefully, you know, get some good stuff that people have been asking for.
Now, I don't know if you're going to be able to tell me this, but I do have to ask because everyone's been asking it. What about Forbidden Stars?
I unfortunately do not know anything about that right now. I haven't heard that name come up through any of, like, you know, the new products that have been announced. So I don't know, you know just as much as I do at this point.
Okay, I figured, but it's one of those ones that everyone's asking about, so I have to throw it out there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh,
I hope you have a great con.
Thank you.
And have a good night.
All right, thank you, Sue.
I went into PAX Unplugged saying, you know what, I can't buy any games. And I thought, how hard could it be? Because there aren't any, like, big releases happening. Even the one that I thought was going to happen, I thought there was an outside shot that because this is PAX Unplugged, and it's tied to the Penny Arcade guys, I'm like, this is when they're going to release Thornwatch. But even Thornwatch didn't get released. There wasn't any big announcement. There wasn't any new shiny. The only new shiny was you could go to, like, the first look section and play, like, a copy of some of the games that were coming over from Essen. But even then, it was hard to find them. So there wasn't anything that was, like drawing me. I could be a responsible adult, and I could be good, and I could not spend money that I don't have. And then I realized something. There was one game that I had been on my radar for a while, and I said, you know what? If this game is as good as I think it can be, I'm gonna have to try and convince Suze that it's okay for me to bring it home. And that game was Alien Artifacts from the folks at Portal. Now, Ignacy, the person who's in charge of Portal, and it's, I'll say he's his primary game designer. Ignacy has designed one of my favorite games, which is Imperial Settlers, and I looked at this new game called Alien Artifacts, and I said, this game looks like it's everything I love about Imperial Settlers, and a bunch of stuff I think is missing from Imperial Settlers. And I saw all the screenshots of all the different things that they've made, all the different components, all the different, you know, aliens and all that, and I said, you know what? I gotta demo this game. I gotta see, and I gotta get my hands on this game to see what it's like. And while I'm at it, I gotta make sure I get to the booth and talk to Ignacy, because he's in Poland and he's always hard to get, but he's such a fun interview. I've talked to the man a number of times at different conventions. He is always a blast to talk to. He is a guy who is just full of excitement and passion for this industry and this hobby. He's excited about life, and especially he's excited about cookies. And man, I love talking to Ignacy, and I hope that shows up in here, because this guy is amazing. And I'm not just saying that because he signed the copy of, yes, I did end up buying Alien Artifacts, and he signed my box, and it's adorable, and it's fantastic. It's not every game designer who will thank you for buying his game and draw a little cow in your box. So here's Ignacy, and yeah, I'll have more to say about Alien Artifacts when you're done hearing this.
Pretty much coming into PAX, there was one game that I said, of all the games that are going to be here, especially because I'm only going to be here the one day, there was one game I needed to demo, and that was Alien Artifacts.
I appreciate it. That's super kind.
So the fact that I did, after demoing it, I immediately bought it, having to try and convince my wife that it was a wise idea. I knew that if I had a chance to talk to Ignacy, who was actually here, I wanted to make sure that I got a chance to talk to you. So, Ignacy, how's the con so far?
Amazing. I just talked about the event we had for the Alien Artifacts. 100 people showed up, and it was late in the evening, and I thought, nobody will show up, it's like late, nobody cares. We came to the room, and then there's 100 people entering the room, filling the whole room. We had 20 tables, open copies of Alien Artifacts, 20 volunteers, including Rodney Smith, who was helping me, and Marty from Rolling Dice and Taking Names. Everybody was playing games. Amazing. I'm super happy.
So I know for a fact that you guys have been primarily demoing Alien Artifacts pretty much on every table. What in general has been the response? I mean, you've already kind of hinted at the response, but in general at the tables, what's been the response?
The response is super awesome. We had yesterday to crack open more copies and give to the library, because people were saying that there's not enough tables. We gave copies to the first to look area. There's a first look area when you can test the games. They said it is not enough. We put games to the game library. So basically everybody's trying to play the game, and we have as many tables as we can, and this is all we can have. There is a complex but quick engine building game. Some people get the synergies very quickly. Some are lost and try to figure out what's going on. Some people are coming to me and asking, is this a legit this combo? I say, yes, this is legit. I said, whoa, cool. I mean, yeah, this is card game. Sometimes these cards make such a crazy synergies that players say, wow, that is amazing. Yesterday there was a guy who got a alien artifact card that allowed him to attack other players, and everybody was now surprised, wow, he can attack all of us? I said, yes, he can attack all of you. Wow, that was like amazing.
In my demo, we were going and this one guy was behind the entire game. All of a sudden we get to the end game and he goes, oh, by the way, I get to take three extra turns.
Yeah, there's
and he ended up winning, and we're like, you've got to be kidding me.
Alien artifact again,
So I could see how some players might look at that and be like, that's terrible. How can you do that? I know for me, I think that's great. So has that kind of been the vibe?
Yeah, from the very beginning we say, if you draw alien artifact card, the title of the game, you have no clue what's there. Like, but we wanted to them be very random and very powerful. Like, you cannot build a strategy on alien artifacts, but you know that if you have one, it will change the game for you.
It's going to do something crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it looks like you guys, like, literally, it took me, like I said, this was the only game on my list to make sure I demo, and it took me most of the day to find an empty spot.
Yeah.
So you guys have been doing a lot of good stuff. So I really hope that this continues and that you have
a good day
tomorrow.
Thank you.
Is there anything else coming up with you guys? I know you guys have a ton of stuff out there. Is there anything else that's coming up, or is Alien Artifacts kind of just the go right now?
Yeah, so now is Alien Artifacts, and in a couple of weeks, I think 2 weeks after the show, we will release a new expansion for the Cry Havoc. It is called Aftermath. New structures, new abilities, new skills, all that kind of stuff. And new expansion for Neuroshima Hex, our evergreen, our classic game, Neuroshima Hex.
Okay, I was about to say, you mentioned Neuroshima Hex. What kind of thing are we looking for in a new expansion? Because I love that game.
Yeah, thank you. So Iron Gang, the new expansion, is hitting America in about 2 weeks. New abilities, new powers. Once again, Michael Orage is a genius, in my opinion. I love the guy. And each time he brings us a new army, I say, yes, we want to publish it. Like, I'm not asking any questions. I mean, yes, but I can sign a contract.
So. Consider it done. It's already happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, really, really cool. I'm super happy that you're doing well. And again, hope that you have a great the rest of the con.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
I could go on for quite a while as to what I like about Alien Artifacts, but I think I will put the bulk of that when the guys are back so that I can talk about that. Not only that, not only because I want to hear what they have to say about it, but because of the fact that I really want to get at the table more, because it's the kind of game where you're basically trying to spend credits to buy new stuff, but it's not built yet. So then you buy it to get it kind of in your little production area, and then you have to build it using resources that you get every turn. And depending on how you build it, there's actually decisions as to building it. Do you build it operational? Do you build it logistical? And it does completely different things depending on which one it is. So it has a very similar setup, like board setup, to Imperial Settlers. So if you're familiar with that game, you kind of know. You move it from one side, you then do a thing and take the card from one side to the other side. And there's so much going on. There's so much opportunity for different decisions. There's so many opportunities like Imperial Settlers, it does, like, kind of, you do kind of want to be building your own thing as opposed to messing with everyone else. But even when you do mess with somebody else, it has a very fun feel to it. Like Imperial Settlers, I never, ever, ever mess with anybody else's stuff because it doesn't have any weight to it. You almost feel like you're missing out when you destroy something of somebody else's. In this game, you feel like you are hindering somebody else's progress. Like it actually is hurting them rather than just, you know, slowing them down and hurting you. So again, I'm going to talk more about it later, but man, Alien Artifacts is so good. I was so pleased with that demo. I'm super excited that I was able to get it home. I did demo another game. I demoed Flipships, and Flipships is good. Flipships is a interesting dexterity game. flip ships, basically you flip little cardboard ships and you're flipping them at cards. Any card that your ship is touching gets shot. The ships continue to move closer and closer to you, kind of Space Invader style. And ultimately, by the end of the game, you are flicking your ships into this really cool mothership token, which is basically this giant thing that you kind of flip your things into it. Like, you're almost like you're flying your stuff, just going slamming your ship Independence Day style into the mothership to kind of save humanity. It's a fun game. I don't know if I'd be able to be super psyched about it. Like we had fun. Like, the stories that we told off of that, like we lulled them into a false sense of security, mostly because we couldn't flick our things to save our lives. So, but once they got within a little bit closer to base, we were able to pick them off like nothing. But it's worth, if you like dexterity games, it's worth a check. It didn't necessarily jive with me, but it's entirely because of my own choices. It's a well-made game. It just didn't jive with me. So if you like dexterity games that are quirky and you like a space theme, it might be worth a look. The last bit of audio before I kind of wrap things up, I was able to stop by the Dice Tower booth. And the Dice Tower, I haven't met everybody at the Dice Tower. I've met them. But, I don't really know most of them. We've just had brief little conversations like everybody else at these conventions who are looking for the Dice Tower. But a couple of these guys, I've been very thankful over the past handful of years that I've been able to call these guys friends. And they are always whenever I'm at a convention that they're at, they are among the top-end guys. I'm like, I need to see them because I never get a chance to see them in real life. It's always through Twitter or Facebook. And I get tired of Twitter and Facebook. I want to actually see these guys and hang out with them and have those, whenever possible, hang out with them and play a game where they're actually on the other side of the table. So I made sure that I stopped by the Dice Tower booth, and I actually got audio with Mark Streed and Sam Healy, who are two of my I love these guys. They are absolutely fine, upstanding gentlemen. And it was really good to see them throughout the con as I went about my business, but also to grab this audio here. So without any further ado, Mark and Sam from the Dice Tower.
When I went into PAX Unplugged, I said, it's so great because there are so many people who I talk to on the internet all the time, but I only get to see at conventions. So I wanted to make sure that I got to see them. Well, I'm actually standing with two of them. I got Sam Healy and Mark Streed, yeah, both of Dice Tower fame.
Hello, hello.
Hello, guys. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm back.
So, guys, how has your convention been? Like, this is your first PAX. I was actually surprised because, as I told you before we started recording, I was surprised that with BGGCon this weekend that all y'all came up here. So how is it going for you guys?
It's been really good. I like the vibe. It feels more like an Origins kind of thing. It's very relaxed. I haven't felt high pressured or like I can't move through the hallways.
Right.
It's just nice, easy to get to anywhere. And you can see the hall in a day easy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was talking to a guy earlier today, and that was kind of along the same vibe as what we were talking about. We were saying how this feels like it's not as big as Origins, but if it turns out to be that it is actually bigger than Origins, that's an awesome combination to actually be bigger than another major convention and not feel bigger than another major convention.
Right.
Because that's one of the things that I don't like about conventions,
right,
are the big, the throng of the crowd and being pushed and having to walk, shoulder to shoulder and that type of thing.
The feeling that if you stop to look at something, 15 people are going to be mad at you.
Yes. Or if you're not looking where you're going to run over somebody, That's one of the things I really don't like about it. But this has not been that way.
No, not at all.
It's been cool.
What else has been really cool is so many people have come up to the booth saying, wow, we actually have a convention we can come see you guys at.
Yeah,
that was just really
awesome.
Cool.
It's been really good.
I was talking to somebody the other day that, as far as the big game, like we have some local game conventions that are on the smaller end.
Yeah.
But as far as big game conventions, the only thing we've got is PAX East where there's some tabletop stuff.
Right.
But up until they did this, there really wasn't anything that was of that level. We'd have to get on a plane or drive forever. So, for me, as a guy out of New Jersey, this is super excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so thumbs up for the first show.
Yeah, absolutely thumbs up. I hope PAX Unplugged continues. I think they will. This has been a huge success, I think. So hopefully we'll be able to come back next year.
Yeah.
So what's one thing that you guys, I mean, I know people ask you guys about this all the time whenever you go to conventions.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like, what's the hottest game at the convention? Because I know that that's an annoying question that's impossible to answer.
Right.
But what has been so far your favorite thing, whether it's a game or just something?
Being able to, well, we were just talking about this, being able to play my favorite game of all time twice in one day. We're here at the Geek & Sun booth, and we're using a Geek & Sun table. It's really an awesome table.
They're pretty. I hadn't seen them before. They're pretty.
Yeah, and I've been able to run two games yesterday. I'm going to run one game today after our show that we've got to head to in a little bit. But it's been great, man. I just love working with Geek & Sun, first of all. And then I also like playing my favorite game. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
Definitely. For me, you know, the one game I was most looking for, I wanted that Hero Realms expansion, campaign deck, and the two new boss monsters. So I got it as the first thing I did. But also just seeing everybody at the booth has been really cool. So those are the couple things that I was really into.
Awesome. Well, I know you guys got to get going, but it was super nice to see you guys. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
And I hope you have the rest of the con this really good time.
All right, man. You too.
All right.
All right.
Those guys are absolutely great. Like I said, I go out of my way to make sure I see them whenever it's possible because they're really good guys. Like, the Dice Tower is pretty much synonymous with gaming at this point. Everything they do, like, the gaming world, anybody who does a lot in hobby level gaming, like the deep strategy kind of stuff, or even just is curious as to what's coming out in the games industry. Like, every time, if you go to YouTube and you're looking up game content, pretty much the first page of results you're going to get are all Dice Tower related stuff. So, you know, a lot of people might think, and I've heard them say this in the past as well, a lot of people might think that they would, you know, they feel like that they would be interrupting, like these guys wouldn't be able to talk to people. And the reason that I've gotten to know these guys, the reason I've been able to make friends with them, is because of the fact that that's not even kind of true. These guys are always willing to talk to people. They always, unless they literally have a scheduling conflict, which you could kind of tell towards the end when I was talking to them, they literally were going to go record the Dice Tower live minutes after we got done. So even when there's a scheduling thing, if at all possible, they still love to talk to people, still want that to happen. And it's really cool because that actually tied into a fun thing, because after that, Sam looked at me and said, hey, Dan King, the Game Boy Geek, is there as well. And Dan's great people. He's another guy who I've always talked to online, but I'd never met in person. This was the first time I got to meet Dan in person. And so he's like, hey, we're going to record the Dice Steeple later on, which is their podcast about faith and gaming. And so, do you want in? I go, heck yes, I want to be in. So if you're listening to this, know that if you listen to the Dice Steeple, you can find it on all of the podcasting shenanigans. If you listen to the Dice Steeple, in the near future, you'll be hearing me on that as well. That was a ton of fun to record with those guys, and I didn't see that coming. It's just the nature of this kind of work. It's the nature of being in this industry and connecting with people that I still get jazzed about it. I still get psyched about this being part of what we end up doing at Inroads, is making these connections and building up these relationships with people. It's so cool. I could go on for days, and I wasn't even there all that long. I'm super excited about what we're going to do in the future. I'm gonna end with that. But before I get to that, I do want to talk about all the people who I just briefly met. I didn't have time to get audio, or it didn't feel right to get audio. Like, we were just having a conversation, got so caught up in just having a day-to-day conversation with friends of mine or people I wanted to meet that I didn't sit down and record anything with them. But because at least some of them will be listening to this, I want to make sure that I comment on the fact that I met them. Some people I got to meet for the very first time. Mandy Hutchinson, who I've been talking with occasionally online, especially when it involves her work with Suzanne Sheldon as part of the Dice Tower crew. She's just a lovely human being. Can I just say that? Like, I feel bad every time I hit up Twitter or anything like that, or I see the BGG forums and I see people giving Mandy and Suzanne any kind of grief for not being, you know, quote unquote, good enough for the Dice Tower. Mandy is a freaking lovely person. Just, I only got to hang out with her for like a minute and a half because that woman was running demo after demo after demo, and it took me forever just to say hi to her. But man, in that 5 minutes, it was great. She is such a lovely person. Definitely, if you're at a con where she's at, say hi to her and encourage her because she's doing really good work and she's a really cool person. And yeah, just do that for me, please, because we need bringing all these people and all these voices into the gaming hobby and making them not only a part of the hobby because they've always been a part of the hobby, but really, really, really pushing that and really encouraging these other voices to stand up, because you've no idea the kind of crap they get for just being a part of the hobby. And so please go out of your way to encourage this woman, because she's amazing. And I'm just going to say that. Another guy who's, I guess we can call him amazing, I give him a lot of grief, Marty Cannell from Rolling Dice and Taking Names. Marty is a hilarious guy. Sadly, I usually, every time I'm in the vicinity of Marty, I try to grab audio with him. The couple times we've been at Gen Con together, I get audio with him. I couldn't this year, mostly because I saw him, again, he was another one that I met for a grand total of like 5-10 minutes. He was hanging out with some guys, and they were about ready to go off and do something else at the con, and I said, hey, Marty, I'm going to talk to you later, and he said, yeah, Mike, absolutely, we'll talk before each of us leave. I left and never saw him the rest of the day. It is the annoying part about leaving and being kind of relegated to one day. So I was awesome to see Marty. Always a good time. He does great work. If you're listening to us and you're new to the gaming hobby and you have no idea who I'm talking about, Rolling Dice and Taking Names is an amazing podcast. They do fantastic work. Please go out and see them and encourage them. They are the Statler and Waldorf of the gaming community, and you need to see them and watch them chase flying squirrels. It'll make more sense if you listen to their podcast. I also got to touch base with Jen from Satellite Games. If you listen to the Academy, you've often heard, I did the episode where I kind of, the bonus content here on our podcast, where I talked about my time at the Game Church Academy East. And one of the things we ended up doing was going to, it's the closest thing to a local gaming store I have. I don't really have a local gaming store because I think the closest one to me is 40 minutes away. So these guys at Satellite Games are the closest thing to a local gaming store I've got. And they're awesome. They're just good people who love what they're doing. It seems like she's got a bunch of stuff changing in her life and some stuff going on. But I'm super excited about the direction that she's going in. And I was having these conversations, and this was one of those ones where I'm like, yeah, I could turn on the recorder, but I'm just so happy to talk to a friend of mine. And so much, again, so much about this convention was, it wasn't just, you know, big and businessy and doing the stuff. It literally was touching base with friends who I don't get to see all the time. So that's why I didn't record with her, but she's awesome. They do amazing stuff over there. Check them out. If you're in the Madison, New Jersey area, please do that. It's good times. There was also a huge pile of regulars that I got to talk to. I won't go into all of that because there were so many of you, but if you are listening and you were one of the regulars that I talked to, thank you so much for saying hi to me. It was funny because I ended up, the first time I called my wife, you know, towards the end of the evening, as I was getting ready to start gearing up to go home, and I called her just to touch base and to hear her voice. And I said, babe, it's the strangest thing, because this one is so local that there are people here who I hear them calling my name. I hear people recognizing me, and it's weird, and I loved it. It was so encouraging every time somebody was talking about the fact that they were psyched to actually meet me. And I really want to thank you for that, because it's such a cool thing. And it reminds me just how blessed I am to do this work, how blessed I am to be able to call this my ministry. So thank you, all of you who touched base with me. And I'm just going to wrap up with a little bit of what we hope to see in the future. Sean and I were talking. We're hoping that we're going to be able, hopefully the guys at Game Church are going to come back to PAX Unplugged next year. It seems like they are, because everything I talked to them about was, it was a very positive experience. So hopefully they'll be coming back. And if they do, we have been talking with those guys about sharing a booth at a convention where Game Church will be doing the Game Church thing and we will be demoing games. I really want to see that happen. So I'm gonna call them on that, and hopefully we'll be able to make that a reality at PAX Unplugged, because that would be amazing, because Game Church has the resources that we have, and we have the tabletop knowledge that they're only just getting into. Like, all of they, you know, they are great guys, but they are only just getting into tabletop gaming. So we would be able to step into that and help them be them better, and they'll help us be us better. And so it's such a good relationship. We love those guys. And so hopefully that's going to be something that happens. I'd love to run a panel. The one thing that is so great about PAX is that it is so community driven that it is really easy to set up and do a panel. I don't know what it's going to be yet. I have an entire year to figure that out, but I want to run a panel because there's so much stuff that we can talk about. So many things about the nature of this ministry and the nature of gaming. I want to do that. And so we're going to try and do that. We're definitely going to try and get together, because there's so much open gaming. We want to do like we did at Gen Con, where there was the regular meetup. And I want to do that. I wanted to actually do that in a kind of organized fashion, like schedule a time where any of the regulars who were there at the con can plan to get together at a certain spot in the open gaming table and just go to town. Just do that. Just go play games and hang out and continue to build those relationships in MeetSpace, as opposed to on Facebook and all those other places. But again, there's so much that I want to see happen. So much. I'm still reeling. This is literally, I'm recording this literally the day after I got home. So I am so fried, and so my mind is just buzzing with stuff about what I want to see happen at PAX Unplugged in the future. But definitely it's going to be on our radar. It's going to be something that we look forward to, something we plan for. And because of the fact that Sean and I are both within, you know, I'm within 2 hours, Sean is within like 20 minutes of train ride. So it's definitely going to be something that we want to do and we look forward to doing in the future. So hopefully they end up keeping PAX Unplugged in Philly and continue to be as awesome as they were this year. I got one last story to kind of throw this out there, because one thing that did surprise me about PAX Unplugged was that there wasn't a lot of cosplay, because normally when I go to conventions, there's a ton of cosplay. There was some, but there wasn't a lot. But one of the costumes that really got me was this woman who was dressed up as a beholder from D&D. And I'm like, your costume is amazing. And she looked at me and says, would you like to roll a die to see how you die? And I go, why would I not do that? And so she pulled out this giant, like, paper craft, like, D10, and just had me roll it. And I got, and she goes, oh, you didn't die. You're just paralyzed. And I'm like, that's, and then she proceeded to pull a card out of this little envelope. And it said, she wrote on it, you've been paralyzed. And she handed it to me. And it had her contact info and all that stuff. It was such a cool little moment. It's stuff like that that really, I don't know, it makes me laugh, and it makes me excited about what the creativity that's out there into the gaming world. And I don't know, it makes me smile. I hope it made you smile too. And I can't think of any way better to wrap up this solo mic episode for PAX Unplugged than to tell you that story, and then also to remind you, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.